everyone, and welcome into episode number 294 of the We Don't Know Either podcast. I'm Lindsay.
I'm Nick.
I'm Michael.
I'm Becca.
Hi, Becca. I've been calling you Rebecca, and now I know it's Becca.
You can do whatever you want, just don't call me Becky.
Okay.
That's my one thing.
It's in her host file. It's literally, it says Becca.
It's Becca.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, now I know. I'm sorry. I don't know. Your email says Rebecca, right? Doesn't it?
It definitely does.
It does. It took me a while when I would upload scores. I was trying to figure out, I'm like, wait, there's no Rebecca. Oh, Becca. Got it.
I just try to be really confusing all the time.
Perfect.
Like, so far, you're crushing it. cool. So Becca is one of our awesome hosts. You host at Froggy Bottom. Anything that you want to say to your regular players, because I know that's how you kind of came to be on this podcast, that they were harassing you a little bit and you finally like, oh, fine, I'll do it.
Yeah, no, I have a really great following at Froggy Bottom. We have a really good time, and they know what to do when somebody shouts out the answers. So I appreciate that.
What do they do?
Hang on.
No, they're just really good at shaming, and I appreciate it, so I don't have to do it myself.
What do they
do
to shame?
Lots of boos and pointing, and everybody gets involved, even people who aren't playing trivia. It's really fun.
Good.
That is awesome.
I am pro public shaming. I'm just pro it. I'm just, you know, that's if I'm running for office, I'm pro public shaming. I want to put that out there.
Right. Hence, this is why, honestly, this is one of the reasons why we created the podcast, was because, you know, we got tired of shaming Michael in private in the office. So we said we need a public forum to do this in. So we said, why don't we do a podcast? And then we can just publicly shame Michael.
Yeah.
Happy to be back, guys.
Yeah.
Happy to be back.
So, Becca, what then is your most, speaking of shaming, what would be your most embarrassing story as a trivia host? Because we all have them.
I can't say words. I know. I can say a lot of words. And reading them, I really appreciate. They're all written down for me already. But some of them, they're a little difficult. Even when the spelling is right there. And you read it through a few times and you just can't get it. So I'll say it out loud. And most of the time I get boos. And then I get people helping me out. And ironically, I don't actually mind missaying the words because I think it's hilarious. And other people start to get embarrassed themselves. They're like, oh no, she didn't know how to say that. I'm a little worried about her.
And we say that like reading is one of the base requirements of being a trivia host. If you are a trivia host, I'm your boss, and I can't pronounce anything, even with the pronunciation guide. What, Monaco? I just still don't know how to say Monaco. I don't know. I don't know what that country is. I'm sorry.
Bahrain was my hard one this week.
Yeah.
Bahrain? Wait.
Bahrain.
Hold on. Yeah. What country is Bahrain?
Bahrain? Bahrain.
I'm pretty sure it's Bahrain.
Bahrain.
Thank you so much.
I'm here to help, Becca.
I've started to pre-warn people where I'll look at the question before I read it. And I'm like, well, this is another one that you guys are going to yell at me for being wrong. But we're going to get through it together, guys. We're going to get through it together. And people appreciate that.
Yeah, I think this is a good point to say. If you are interested in hosting, you can yes. go to our website and click on the envelope in the upper right-hand corner and select, I want to be a host.
Yeah, we're hiring in Portland, Baltimore, and District.
Yeah.
Or D.C., Maryland,
especially,
Virginia.
Yeah, especially if you're in Baltimore or Portland.
You can be on the podcast.
Yeah.
Okay, so Becca, we've had a host on here recently the last few weeks. I've been letting them go first for their interesting fact, but not for you. We're going to go with Michael because I want to start the bar out so low that we're going to be guaranteed that you're better than him.
Fantastic.
Once again, happy to be back. Okay.
You're not even prepared, Michael? No,
I'm absolutely prepared. So who was the first person to use four cameras during sitcom filming? Nick, quiet down. I feel like you know this.
What?
So most sitcoms...
Who has a television production background here?
That'd be you.
Yeah, okay. So I want you to assume that I know things for once.
No, but it's Nick. And here's the thing. When you get it right, it's like, it's cool. It's part of the thing. When Nick get it, he's annoyingly smug about it.
That's a good band name.
Wait.
Dibs.
Wait.
Annoyingly smug. Dibs.
That's our new podcast. I feel like this is an unfair characterization. I am not annoyingly smug when I know the answer to something. I am always annoyingly smug.
Fair point.
Okay, so go into detail.
So yeah, so most sitcoms through today are filmed in a with four cameras. You got four different angles, and then what's called the X camera. You got three kind of stationary cameras, and the fourth is the X camera, which
like a
is
boom camera.
Exactly. It's designed to just follow the lead.
So this is like when people are zooming in on the crying face and then you pan to the other corner and you see somebody who is not crying and you're wondering what's why, but they don't see each other. And it's because there's multiple cameras doing that work.
Exactly. So it cuts back and forth so you can get different pieces of the conversation. Right. The article that I'm looking at right now, actually credits the X camera on catching like Chandler's reactions mm-hmm. on Friends, those kind of great George Costanza moments.
Yeah.
So that's the X camera. So who was the first person to use? Because before that, they were using only three cameras.
Right.
So who was the first person to go, we need a fourth camera for this?
Is this person, are you looking for the director of photography, the actual camera person? Or are you talking about the actor that they particularly wanted to make sure that they captured?
Or do you want the name of the show that was the first show to use it? That's how you asked it the first time.
Let's go ahead and name of the show.
Okay, name of the show.
First show to use the four camera format.
All right.
I have a guess, but since I was told to be quiet, I'm just going to sit here.
I'm just going to let other people get in first.
Yeah, sure.
Becca, please.
Since I only watch TV post 2010, no, I'm kidding. I'm gonna say, yeah, iZombie. I'm gonna say Friends because you mentioned Chandler.
I did.
Yeah, I mean that would be a very bold hint on your part, Michael.
Yes, no, it's...
that would actually be brilliant. That would be 100% brilliant if he used the actual answer as an example. But since it's Michael, there's no way that's what happened.
Oh, Michael. The Jerry of our podcast.
It's starting to hurt.
The Jerry of our podcast. Well, we missed you, so we have to,
sure. have to make up for it.
Yeah. Okay. I feel like I had read this recently, and then I thought, wow, that would be a really interesting fact for the podcast, but I'm going to save it.
Okay.
And then I forgot what the answer was because I read the article and I was like, wow, this is super interesting. But I'm going to sit on it and wait. And I thought that somebody else might bring it. And you did. And I didn't look it up, but I don't remember. So,
OK,
it wasn't something with Robin Williams. No,
it yes. was. It
yes.
was.
It
okay.
was. It was Mork and Mindy.
It was Mork and Mindy.
OK. OK.
So
that
Gary,
was not my guess.
Gary Marshall was the one who created the show as a spinoff from Happy Days.
I didn't know that was that. It's obvious now that it's a spinoff of Happy Days, but I didn't know. Doesn't make sense.
Now what happened?
Doesn't make sense.
What happened was Robin Williams was so physical with his comedy. He'd be jumping around on the stage. They wouldn't always be able to capture him using the three cameras. So Gary Marshall was very much like, we need a fourth camera, and his only job is to stay on Robin Williams.
Right.
Whatever Robin Williams does, we need to make sure we get the shot. Because I actually saw this, but back when I was home, it was a while back.
Is California.
Home is Southern California. Me and my parents were watching the documentary that HBO did on Robin Williams and his life, and that's where they first mentioned it. Is where I saw it anyway. That they were just trying to contain him. They were just really trying to make sure whatever he did, we got it on camera because he did something and. Gary Marshall looks at the guy and goes, did you get it? And he goes, no, man, it was over there.
Right.
That's how I felt growing up with my dad following me around with his camera. He'd be like, snap, 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 as I'm jumping around. You can ask him any day of the week, any month of the year. He'll have a picture of me and doing the exact same thing. So I'd say I'm scratching my original answer. I think my father was the first one.
Would you watch a sitcom of yourself?
Oh, gosh, of myself.
Yeah. That's a yes or no. Easy question.
I would, but I wouldn't want to listen to it because I hate listening to my own voice.
Oh.
Which is ironic because I am on a podcast
now. I was going to say, we just lost one listener to next week's podcast.
Yeah, unfortunately. Unfortunately. Okay, Becca, so I know that your fact also bleeds into my fact. So I'm going to go from Michael's and I'm going to go next if that's cool. I want to talk about wine. Have you heard of it?
I have.
Is that what Michael does when he runs out of paper?
Oh, my gosh. Now we just got mean.
I'm sorry. I'll stop.
Okay. One nice thing, Michael.
One more.
I'm going to need some after this podcast.
You know
is what it is.
This is one more.
One more.
But I'm not going to tell you when it's coming.
Okay.
Okay. So have you guys drank wine?
Yes.
Today or?
In the last 10 minutes. Yes. No. Drunk podcast coming up. Episode number 300. Okay. Anyway.
I may or may not be there.
yeah, anyway. So a sommelier. You guys, what does a sommelier do?
It's a wine connoisseur.
Expert.
Yeah. It's an expert, yeah. So I started to do some research as to how do you become a sommelier, which I'm very happy I'm pronouncing correctly, I think.
I see you.
Yes. You're spot on.
There's an R in it. What the heck is that R doing there? Sommelier. Anyway, so they just had some big time controversy over the last week. They do this. There's like a three-step process to become a master sommelier. Okay.
You shadow, then you co-host.
then you solo.
Yeah. The big, huge process. So my first question is, how many master sommeliers are there in the world? So the three steps, you get certified, then you're advanced, then you're a master. So how many of them have attained that status since this master sommelier class was created in 1969?
Well, it reminds me of that episode from Parks and Rec where April goes into the sommelier class and is just
excellent episode.
Random things about wine. So, you know, I think there's probably moments where people have done just that and gotten by.
I would be
so. If every, your number is higher than
every wine
is.
Tasting I've ever been to. Earthy,
earthy, yeah,
a nutty nose.
There's a loamy, like a dried cherry sort of, yeah, sort of flavor to it.
It's very peppery in the back.
I can tell you that this exam is not one that you can BS your way through. It is three parts, and I started to look through it, and it is real hard. You have to go through a bunch of prereqs to get even to this advanced level. It's hard. It costs over $1,000 to take this test, and you have to be approved to even take it. And the pass fail rate is very, very.
Do they supply the wine?
Yeah, that's part of the class. Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
I wasn't sure if you had to bring your own.
This is my follow up. This is my actual interesting fact is about the test itself.
Oh, okay.
But Nick, any guesses as to how many master sommeliers there are in the?
Okay, so I'm a little bit older than everybody in the room. Becca, I'm not sure how old you are, but I'm assuming that I'm a little bit older than you are.
A little bit.
A hair older than most of the people in the room. I actually have a friend of mine who's one of them.
A master sommelier?
A master sommelier,
whoa,
yes.
Is he on the website? Is he part of the Court of Sommeliers? Which is a great name, by the way, for a group of people.
Is that the plural noun for sommeliers?
I don't know, but that's the name of their...
The collective noun, yeah.
That's the name of their governing body.
Okay.
Do they get swords?
I wish. I know they'll get pins.
So when he joined up, I think...
So they do get something sharp.
I think he was like number 180 or 190, and I think there's been like 30 or 40 since then. So I'm going to say like 220.
Pretty good guess.
I'm going to go a little higher. I'm going to say 400.
Okay.
See, I was going to go way low. I was going to say like 50.
50. So like one a year really since 1969.
Yeah. I was thinking like there's one for every major city. One in New York, one in Tokyo.
That would be a super interesting way of doing it. And then how do they determine when that person gets replaced? Is it like a lifetime appointment, or is this like a Highlander situation?
See, I think it's kind of like you get re-upped when you have to do your license renewal.
Test, and if somebody beats you on the new test?
No, you keep re-upping until you fail the test, then somebody else comes in.
Or like drumline style.
Right.
Like
that's what challenge. Yeah, that's what I said, like Highlander style. Like there can only be one. So you can challenge sitting sommelier.
Is there a time limit? Like can he be some master sommelier for 6 months? Or like as soon as the next guy's gone, it's like, I'm next.
Right.
We're like going tomorrow.
How many challenges back to back to back can you fend off? Is this like a Mortal Kombat scenario where you just have to go up the ladder?
I want it to be.
It should be now.
Step it up, Court of Sommelier.
We see you. So only 274.
274. Yes. Okay.
274 have attained the status. 273-ish. So they just recently invalidated 24 individuals this year because they caught somebody cheating.
I got to call up my buddy and see if he's one of them.
And so they haven't.
He definitely would be one of them.
So they have people in the court that actually design the test and things. So they know, you know, who cheated out of the class of 24. But they just said, nope, just we have to make sure that there is no cheating whatsoever. So those 24 people that spent all this money, it'll be refunded. They have to retake this test. But they thought that they passed. And now they got to go do it again because one guy cheated.
Oh, okay.
Or girl. But
I thought all 24 cheated.
No.
So I was just like, wait, they all get kicked out. But they get their money back and get to retake the test?
No, just one person. So it's been a big, crazy thing in the wine world. So my follow-up question, because I think this is super interesting. So you go through, you do theory, and you have to know, there's some parts you have to know about cigar, and you have to know about what, like, wine basic pairings, and the theory is intense. Then you go to service, and, you know, how do you actually present the bottle? How do you open the bottle? That's very, very particular things. And then the last one is the tasting portion. So how many wines do you taste and how long do you have to give the judges verbally to identify the grapes, the country of origin, describe the taste? So how many wines and how long is the tasting?
There's your secret phrase.
What?
Describe the taste.
Describe the taste. Okay. I'm down with that. Describe your taste is the secret phrase.
The taste.
Describe the taste.
That's what I said.
You said your taste.
Oh, the taste. Okay. Yes. Describe the taste. describe the taste. I get emails every week, so I'm just making sure that it's very clear.
Do you really? Like,
yes.
Like 3 weeks ago, you took 5 minutes out of the podcast to announce that this was the secret phrase.
And I announced it again right now. Right. Describe the taste.
I mean, honestly, if you're getting emails from people that are complaining that they can't find the secret phrase in there, I have a tip for those people. Stop scanning through the episode looking for the secret phrase and just listen to it. And then it'll be blatantly obvious.
Okay, but my question still remains. So how many wines do you taste as part of this Master Sommelier course or test? And how many minutes do you have? So how many wines is the first question?
Okay.
15 wines.
15?
You're just going to throw out a number?
I'm throwing out the Barbersville Vineyard taste. Okay. Tasting.
Sure.
For like $10.
They did 15.
They okay. did 15. I think that's the sommelier.
So, I mean, here's the thing. How long is the test?
Oh, that, right.
That's
second.
Question number two.
Right. So work it backwards. Like, assuming for a second that this is a 4-hour master's course final exam where it's very in-depth, where you have to sit there and progress your way through the whole thing. Don't you think 15 wines is short for a 4-hour exam?
I absolutely think it is, and that's why I'm thinking that if I have to throw in a time, 30 minutes.
Really?
15 wines, 30 minutes. I want the grape. I want the country of origin.
Uh-huh.
Bring it.
Okay.
If you're going to be the master,
right?
You got to bring it.
Becca?
I definitely think they have to bring it, but I feel like it might be more wines. I don't know. My gut tells me at least 20. At least 20 wines.
Really?
And like 2 minutes per wine.
Okay.
So I don't know, that's math. That's 40
minutes.
40 minutes.
Yeah. I'm with you, but I'm going a slightly different direction. I think 3 minutes per wine, so like a minute to taste and to mull over exactly what it is you're doing, and then
and
2
waft.
Minutes, yeah, and waft and whatever. And then 2 minutes
swirl.
2 minutes sort of to bring it to figure out where it all is and put it all together in your head. But I'm going to say it's like a 6-hour exam. I'm going to say it's almost a full day.
I have a question about the test itself. You said during the tasting phase they need the grapes and the country of origin?
Grapes, country of origin, vintages.
Vintage.
You know what I'm saying. Oh, pronouncing things is hard. Hard is hard. No. And describe the taste in the wine people way. I don't know.
Okay.
I get the $5 bottles. So, if it's over $6.99, I'm out.
I'm going with 6 hours, which means I'm going to say it's 200 wines.
Okay. All right. Your final guesses are all wrong.
Oh.
And it's only 6 wines.
Okay. 6 wines.
6 wines from anywhere all over the world, and it's 25 minutes.
Wow. Okay. Well, Michael was pretty close on the time.
And you have to be super specific. And so this particular, so you take the test in those three parts, the theory, the service, and then the tasting. The tasting was where the cheating happened because they think that one of the exam proctors gave some insight as to which wines they were going to be and da 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 da. So only the tasting portion has been thrown out, but that's obviously the most difficult part of it. So that's going to be my actual question. How many wines do you take as part of the Master Sommelier class or examination, and it's going to be 6 is your answer.
You pass the Master Sommelier Challenge.
Mm-hmm.
What drink do you celebrate with?
You make $170,000 a year once you become a Master Sommelier.
So you're buying is what good. I'm hearing.
Yeah.
Like a bourbon.
Yeah,
maybe.
Like just a nice...
Cleanses the palate. Okay, your fact, though, Becca, was about wine.
I'm going to Trader Joe's and buying, like, 200 bottles for like $400.
You saw the big one I brought, the big box that came to the office.
Is that what the 300th episode is going to be? Just 6 hours of you and your 200 bottles of wine.
Yeah.
But no, my fact is wine related too.
Ooh,
and
that was a segue wine.
Yeah.
I liked it and I enjoyed it. But no, wow. I mean, the wine industry it's complicated and it's full of a lot of drama. I have found. I read this great book where I found my fact.
Oh, wait, I'm sorry. Did you say a fact from a book?
Yes.
Whoa.
But there's articles and websites and whatnot.
How am I going to link to it?
Yeah, I do have a link from the industry standard for this fact. But this book is called To Cork or Not to Cork. And it's about wine corks, which, people collect them, I guess, and make like art things out of them.
Sure. Pegboards.
Pegboards and stuff like that. People toss them. They use them to cork their wine bottles. But I got really fascinated with wine corks. So my fact is, which country produces the most amount of wine corks?
Of corks?
Yeah.
So I don't know anything about the cork making production. So I don't know anything at all.
Yeah.
And I can tell keep you a talking about yeah, please. Yeah. Tell me more about making of the corks.
Again, really weird process that I never knew anything about. I guess these trees have to be at least 25 years old before you harvest from them, and you take out off the outer part of the bark to make the cork, and then they punch the corks through and everything like that. It's a really involved like craftsmanship process that's been going on for hundreds of years, and only one group has a very cornered the market, really. And it's just a really intensive process.
I wonder what percentage of a bottle of wine, like the cost of a cork is.
So they're actually running out of cork.
Yep.
Isn't it? Like the trees aren't mature enough in order to harvest, and they've cut down all the ones that are, so that like corking wine bottles may be shortly a thing of the past.
Yeah, it takes like 9 years for them to replenish. So
Christmas trees, corks.
You see a lot of wines going to screw tops now too.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Which in the book, ironically, there's this whole it's a lot of drama in the wine world.
Right,
sure.
Potentially, screw tops are better for the wine than the cork is, because the cork can cause cork taint in your wine.
Oh. Corks also gave me a lot of stress when I worked at the restaurant. I had people made me cry.
Because you couldn't take a cork out of a bottle?
Okay, I'm 20 years old. I'm not drinking wine out of a box. One time I brought red wine and I was like, hey, here's your bucket of ice for it. And the table was like, you're an idiot.
And then on the red.
Well, I was just like, here's some ice, guys. And they're like, please don't put that bottle in there. Like, okay. And another time I accidentally, the little corkscrew just barely broke out of the cork. And the guy went to the bar manager, who went to me. And then the bar manager and the table were screaming at me that I like ruined this $100 bottle of wine. It haunts me.
This is a very traumatic experience.
It
obviously.
Really was. Okay. Anyway, your question. So, which country? Argentina.
All right. Just throw it out there.
Yep.
Michael.
Ireland.
That was exactly going to be my answer. That was 100% going to be my answer. And I'm sure it's for the same reason. Why?
Cork.
It's Cork County.
Yeah.
I've been there. Great live music.
100% with you.
Were there a lot of trees there in Cork County?
I remember.
Not a lot, which is why the shortage was there.
I remember trees.
There used to be.
I remember trees. Okay. I don't know. What is it? What is your answer? Or Nick, did you already guess? He said Ireland.
I was going Ireland as well. Yeah.
Portugal.
Portugal.
They grow really well on the Mediterranean, but Portugal has cornered the market, and Spain's next. So, who knew?
I do now. We don't know either.
Right. All right. So my interesting fact, I have no transition other than the fact that we are doing Harry Potter events.
Yes.
At the end of the month.
Yes.
Once again, if you are interested in playing Magic Trivia.
Yeah, Trivia Magic.
Right, you can
there
check
will
it out.
There will be some trivia related to Harry Potter and Fantastic Beasts and a whole bunch of other fun things. No, it's just that.
So we have this huge event here in D.C. every year. We have already sold out the first one. The second one went on sale a couple of days ago and is almost sold out now. So if there are still tickets available when you're listening to this, we highly recommend you go and grab them.
districttrivia.com/triviamagic if you're in the D.C., Maryland, Virginia area. $1,000 cash prize up for grabs.
Right. We're also doing one out in Portland, right?
Yeah, Portland. Check it out. Bridgetown Trivia.
Yeah, so here is my my Harry Potter fact.
Oh, okay.
Which Game of Thrones actress played Hermione's mother?
I think I know this.
Say it. What do you got?
Bring it.
Was it Caitlin Stark?
It was Caitlin Stark.
But I don't know the actress's name. Dang it.
I didn't know that was the same person.
So Michelle Fairley is her name. She played Caitlin Stark in Game of Thrones for the first couple of seasons until something bad happened at the end of the second season that we won't talk about. But yeah, she's in one very brief flashback scene in The Deathly Hallows.
Yep, R.I.P. Not R.I.P., but R.I.P. Your memory.
Hermione modifies their memories, and she's just in this quick flashback scene, and that's her, same actress. So just once again, British actress that's in both Game of Thrones and Harry Potter.
Cool.
So there are a lot. Yeah, there's three very specific categories. There's British actors that are in Harry Potter, and British actors that are in Doctor Who. And then there's another category of British actors who are in both Harry Potter and Doctor Who.
Who is in that?
All of them.
They're in both Doctor Who and Harry Potter?
There's a lot.
There's a fair amount of crossover.
Yeah, there's a ridiculous amount of crossover.
And you're saying that these are the only British actors that exist.
Yes.
Yes, that is correct.
I've always wanted to get in Doctor Who, but I find it to be overwhelming.
It is. There's a lot of different ways to do it.
Nick, I don't have enough time in the day.
If you ask Nick on after the podcast, he has a very good way of getting into it.
Yeah.
It worked for me.
All right, well, we're going to talk about it because we're going to wrap up this episode. Becca, you're going to be back next week because we like you. And that's really it. You did great. Way better than Michael's ever done or ever will do.
I feel like I'm about to get replaced.
But this has been the This has been the We Don't Know Either podcast. I'm Lindsay.
I'm Nick.
I'm Michael.
Becca.
We don't know either.
Bye.